I'm not pulling in my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another Drive to Work at Home edition. So I like to use my time at home interviewing people. And today is Annie Sardellis. We're going to talk about the vision design of Duskmourn, House of Horrors. Dun, dun, dun. Okay, Annie. So let's start from the very beginning. How did you find out that you were even doing the set? What was your first introduction to you? This was called Swimming in over their
coding. Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's see. Well, it all, I guess, the theme came about, like, there's all these, like, genre spaces that we haven't yet explored yet, which is kind of, like, where you see this lineup of, like, MKM with mystery, OTJ with villain heist, and here we have modern horror, right? And I served as sort of, like, I was on the vision team for MKM, and I served as a strong second on Outlaws, and that was all sort of just like to ramp up of, you know, possibly leading the vision design of Duskmourn. So I learned a lot from Mark along the way.
So we threw you in the deep end. So normally, yeah. The first time you do a premiere set, traditionally, you normally do a return, because returns are a little bit easier, because we've been there before. You have some guideline for what we've done. But this is a brand new world. We've never been, and not just a brand new world, but like we're pushing boundaries on this world, right? We didn't quite know what people would think.
Yeah, it definitely had its pros and cons. Like the pro is it's like a blank slate. You can do anything you want. And also like I'm kind of a fan of horror, you know, like I really like film and I really like horror. So yeah, but unlike return twos, you know, you know what the people want, you know what to give them. It's a little easier. You have like this first couple bricks laid for you, but yeah, this is fresh, but it was definitely fun.
Okay. So one of the things we talked about very early, I believe this was an exploratory design. So because Innistrad exists, Innistrad is a very popular world. It does gothic horror. And on some level you could argue New Phyrexia also does, I call it alien horror, but like it does a different kind of horror. We were doing something that was brand new, and, like, not being Innistrad was kind of important. I know that very early on. We're like, okay, we want to be horror, but we don't want to just copy. We don't want to be Innistrad Part 2. We want to be something unique and different.
Yeah. Innistrad is, you know, I hope Duskmourn would be similarly beloved to Innistrad in that, like, just absolutely nail the tropes. Like, you know, the hordes of zombies. Like, here you might see a zombie with haste, you know? Like, the zombies are, do not mess around in modern horror. They are running at you. So, but yeah, it's like, in order to differentiate from Innistrad, we really tried to focus on zones or just mechanics that they didn't care about. Like, Innistrad has a pretty strong typal, like, humans versus monsters gimmick, and also uses the graveyard a whole lot. Like, all through vision design, we honestly tried to make sure our marquee mechanics didn't touch the graveyard, which did leave a bit of a gap for set design to jump in and be like, all right, let's use it in this way, right? But, like, we wanted to make sure our marquee new stuff didn't touch in the same space as Innistrad mechanically.
Yeah, so one of the things that happened, and I believe this happened in Exploratory, was we said, okay, what is the thing that modern horror has going for that's a little bit different from sort of the classic gothic horror? And one of the things that was really interesting was we talked about how, like, mood and tone are so important. Like, a lot of times, like, you don't even see the monster for a while, but just, like, from moment one, it's just creepy, and that the suspense of not knowing when or where things will happen is part of what makes it scary.
Yeah, I think that's, so yeah, speaking to mood and tone, we just started looking through like, well, what card types in Magic like already do a pretty good job of that. And I think Mark, yeah, you proposed like enchantments. Let's look at enchantments. And I was like, you know what? You're right. Like there's stuff like claustrophobia, crawling sensation, always watching. These are like game pieces that they stick around, they linger, they change the rules, like the nature of the game, right? Like, so they really do a good job at capturing, like, you know, the mood has changed or something in the air, like something's going on.
Okay, so pretty early on, we said, let's make enchantments matter. I mean, Innistrad had curses, so it wasn't like enchantments mm-hmm. didn't exist, but it wasn't a major theme. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the most fun we had in vision design, was we said, okay, I think we knew going in that we were going to be inside a house. I think that had been, when the set got greenlit, I think we knew modern horror and we knew all that's inside a house. I think those are the two things we knew walking in. So we were very fascinated by the idea of rooms. So let's let's talk a little bit about the craziness that was the exploration of how to do rooms.
Yeah, so with the plane essentially being one big giant house, like that really does lead us with like, all right, how do we really express that? So we looked at other games that do similar things. Betrayal at House on the Hill is a really great board game that gets across like this house that sort of like builds itself as you move around and you never know what's behind any door, right? So I wanted to capture that similar feeling, which led us down some really wild paths. I think one of the really early ones is there was like sort of like a side deck that was like the house, and you would play cards that say like explore the mansion, and you would like reveal cards in that deck, and you have like out like a max of 3 rooms or something like that, and you would represent which one you're standing in with like a literal meeple, like a little piece of a dude, and you would put it on that room. So you'd be like, all right, I'm going to explore the mansion. Ooh, I revealed the infinite hallway. Now all my creatures have haste, you know? And so we like mapped these flavorful effects to the different rooms. We had like 20 or 30 of them. Yeah,
it was so crazy. So I think the earliest version was you just flipped up 3 and then all the effects happen. And that was just too much. So yeah. That's when we added the meeple. We're like, oh, okay. And we talked about wanting movement. That's something we were trying to get. Like, oh, I'm in the kitchen, but now I'm in the library. Like, you would move from place to place. And then it took, we liked the movement, but it took too long. With 3 cards, it just took too long before you, you had to have 2 things out before you even move from one thing to the other thing. So I think the next version, we had multiple rooms per card. I think it was 4 when we started. Do you remember this? There were, like, 4 rooms per card.
Yeah, like, individual cards, like, held all the rooms
There were, like, 4 rooms.
It
kind of
looked like a dungeon.
Yeah, it's kind of like a dungeon, yeah. And then you would place them, and then you could move between rooms, either vertically within one card or horizontally between different cards.
You could touch the cards to each other and move, like, across them, which, you know, is, again, like, very board gamey.
And then I think we let you move so many spaces, so sometimes, you cross through rooms and other rooms. And then for a while we had like a footstep thing where you put footstep markers where you went.
I mean, the footsteps, they were to be like, it turned out the best thing to do was just like to jump between your 2 favorite rooms. And I'm like, well, if you're stuck in a haunted house, like that doesn't really feel like you're running for your life. It feels like you're trying to get the most out of the experience. So we're like, okay, well, you can't go backwards. So if you leave behind this counter, that means you can't
go back
to that.
Keep forward, yes.
So, yeah.
And then I think 4 rooms per card became 3 rooms per card, which became 2 rooms per card. And then we had a period where they were kind of like dominoes, where you could put any room next to any room. And so you would start like staggering them so that you could sort of line things up. And then eventually we're like, okay, we can't, like, we took away the deck. We took away the meeple. How do we get to the rooms that are there? So like we sort of, you can see the essence of what we're talking about.
Yeah, we did end up with 2 rooms per card. It just didn't feel right to only have 1 room there. It doesn't really feel like you're moving. It's just sort of like, could just be any old enchantment at that point, right? So we kept like the idea of having 2 different sides to unlock, and we use terminology like unlock a,
unlock a room.
So, a locked door. So we did keep a lot of the terminology so that when you're playing the game, it sounds a lot more flavorful. Like, yes, these 2 rooms are sort of like on different halves of an enchantment, but the terminology you're using and like the effects of like, when I unlock this door, something is going to happen. What's going to happen? I don't know. Another mechanic from the set, probably. And they're all very flavorful and really wacky.
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of the names of the finished product weren't that far from our, like, mansion room name. You know, like, we knew we wanted, like, the kitchen or, like, things that were very evocative of a house.
Yes.
Although we also had, like, amusement parks. And, like, it was, the house could be anything, so we really tried to hit every trope we could hit.
Oh, it's true. Yeah, like, The Cabin in the Woods is like a movie that I think really captures like the swath of all of like the craziness like shoved into this one house. You want to make sure we're hitting all of our bases.
Okay, so once we had rooms, we had sort of an enchantment theme. So I want to talk about two things we did with enchantments. First up, so when we handed off the file in Vision Design, We had a mechanic called Afraid. So the way Afraid worked was whenever an enchantment, horror, or nightmare entered the battlefield or attacked, trigger.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I guess that's an example of, like, you know, bashing a couple things in your set together to sort of, like, create this glue that ties everything together. And it was sort of, like, under the conceit of, like, I am making my opponent afraid, like a nightmare is coming at them or whatever. At the end of the day, that did become eerie, which, you know, is the new word for it, which is just whenever an enchantment you control enters or you fully unlock a room. So we did want to batch in rooms. Like, we did want to be like, yeah, when you open the other side of that room, you know, this mechanic happens, or when an enchantment enters, which enchantments do map to our nightmares. So it was just sort of like a shorthand way of, like, saying, like, yeah, a nightmare entered, but, you know, they're enchantments. So we get to shorthand that there.
Yeah, we did look at Constellation. But the word just wasn't great. And by making a sort of a new term, we can connect it to other things. Mm-hmm. And I think the them attacking, when you do triggers that happen every turn, they have to be a lot smaller. But by going to just being when they enter, you can make bigger effects. That's kind of why they talk off all the attack stuff. Okay, another thing that we did, we knew since we wanted enchantments to matter, we needed to up our as-fan of enchantments. Some of that was, like, doing enchantment creatures and things. But we also, very early on, had an enchantment creature token. Do you remember the name of the enchantment creature token early on?
Yeah, I think they were just called lights.
Yeah, they were lights, yes.
They would, they were always meant to be, like, the thing the survivors use in order to, like, see their way around. Like, light is light, and also the lights turning off is, like, such a big part of horror that it's like, oh, here's my little glimmer in the darkness that can help me scry. They used to scry.
Yeah, they used to have when you attack, scry one. They were 1/1 enchantment creature tokens, but
yes, now they have settled into just a simple enchantment creature token. Because the Azfan, it's like a good way. We can make a human. They don't need to be made out of enchantments. They could just be like a guy that comes with a light, in order to help, you know, the mechanical glue come all together.
And the lights became glimmers for those that's obvious.
Oh yes. Yeah. They did pick up a flareful name, further down in world building. Glimmers are sort of, they're like the hope that the survivors have. And those sometimes manifest as not just tokens, but actual creatures. I think we've, you know, seen a bunch of those. They're sometimes cute animals.
Okay, so there was one other mechanic that we had in Vision Design that got handed over, which was Manifest Dread.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you remember of Manifest Dread?
So we really wanted to capture suspense in the set. It's like, how do you give people, like, fun little surprises or whatever? And honestly, Manifest is just, it's pretty fun. Like, when you hit a creature, it's pretty darn fun. So it's like, all right, let's see if there's anything we can do to sort of, like, bring Manifest into the modern era and, like, get you to hit those creatures more often. So I think early on it was called Manifest Evil.
Yeah, yes.
And it looked at, you get to look at the top three cards of your library, and then pick one as a creature, but it's like a horror when you put it face down or something like that, so that it would loop into the Afraid mechanic.
Yes.
they just ended up as vanillas now, but they...
And it's two cards, not three cards.
Yes, yeah. It did evolve into just two cards where the other card ends up going into the graveyard. But again, it was just sort of like, we need to find the right number of how many cards to look at. We need to figure out what to do with those cards. Putting two cards in the bottom of the library in any order was like another line of text. Going to just two and chucking one in the graveyard also allowed set design to leverage the graveyard later on.
Yeah, and then that's something. One of the other reasons that the scry went away was because we didn't use the graveyard, scry was fine. But once the graveyard became relevant, you wanted to do surveil and not scry. But the lights were white mostly, and white is good at scrying but not good at surveilling. So anyway, there's a lot of little reasons. Okay, now let's talk about two mechanics that you were on the set design team, so we'll talk about these two that happened after Vision. One was survival. So at the beginning of your second main phase, if you are tapped, do something. So you have to either attack it or find some way to get it tapped. Do you remember the origin of this?
Yeah. Basically, it was near the end of Vision, so we never found anything. But there was, like, this big gap about, like, all right, we know what the nightmares are doing. We know what the house is doing. We know what all these demons and monsters are doing. But what are the people doing? They're so boring. Like, they need a mechanic, right? And so we sort of settled on survival as, like, this simple, like, evocative, like, hey, if you got into combat and you're tapped at the end of combat, that means you lived. Good for you. Maybe you got, like, chump blocked, or maybe you got into a vehicle or something. So it's just this simple way of, like, being like, hey, these guys on the board are doing their best. And there's, like, the wandering, what's her name? The Wandering Survivor.
Yeah.
That's what he's called in the set. Yeah. She has Convoke, so it plays really great with it. There's, like, a lot of little tiny ways to get survival to turn on, which just adds a bit of texture to the game.
The final named mechanic that also got added during set design, but a return mechanic, was Delirium. Would you remember much about Delirium getting added?
Mostly it just seemed like we didn't add it right away. Like I said, we didn't want to step toes on Innistrad. But with our enchantment theme, it just seemed like a slam dunk. Like, it was very easy to add because we have all these dual card types, you know, with enchantment creatures and such in the set. And Manifest Dread, allowing you to dump, you know, maybe you can dump a land in your graveyard when you look at those top two. You know, our set teams have a lot of experience developing with it. It was fairly popular coming out of, I think, like, Modern Horizons 2 or whatever. So, yeah, it just felt natural.
Okay, so I'm going to segue here. You actually had many hats on this project. Not only did you lead the vision design, that wasn't enough. No, you also led the commander design. So I just want to talk a little bit about the commander decks.
So okay.
How many commander decks were there?
We have four.
Okay, so you may talk in any order. So talk about the four commander decks.
Oh my gosh, okay. Let's start it from the top. I got them here. Well, first up is, like, a Esper Enchantments deck headed up by Aminato. So basically when we picked out the face characters for these, I wanted to pick characters from the main story. So that's why you get, like, Val'Gavoth, the big bad, like, as the face of the deck again. And you get these three survivors, Aminato being, like, a helper from outside the house. Winter, who's another face of the deck, being sort of like the resident of Duskmourne, who is duplicitous. And then we have Zimone, who sort of, like, fills that nerd archetype of, you know, survivors in horror shows. But yeah, to start it off, Aminato and Esper with enchantments. Enchantments, obviously, a giant part of Duskmourne. And we brought back the miracle mechanic just because it really feels fitting for her. It's like she is super powerful and so is Miracle. So you get to play all these really expensive, powerful enchantments in your deck and hopefully top deck your way to victory with that one.
And who did that deck? Who led the design of that deck?
Oh, Ellie Rice.
Yes.
Who also did Miss Bumbleflower. So she likes to make weird decks. Let's just say that. But extremely cool decks. All right, next up, we have a good old Golgari graveyard deck. That's with Winter at the face of it. And the marquee mechanic for that one is Delirium. Very natural. It's a graveyard deck. So we're sort of leveraging Delirium to reanimate big creatures and do shenanigans with them, and I led that deck. So next up is Zimone. She uses the Manifest Dread mechanic.
What kind of is the deck?
Simic, so green blue.
Okay.
And so yeah, she links Manifest Dread with Landfall in this way where you have to, like, sequence your stuff all crazy. There's a lot of instants and tricky stuff, which is why the deck is kind of themed to jump scares, because she does lean into that face down stuff. Like, she will pass the turn with all of her mana open and you'll be like, oh my gosh, Simone, give me a break. It was headed up by Michael Zhang, who is one of our editors and rules people of the game, so he really liked to make some tricky stuff. I hope that you enjoy the deck, because my brain hurts when I try to play it. So,
well, Zimone's very smart, so.
Yes. That is the top down there. And then last up is good old Val'Gavoth, the harrower of souls, our elder demon, leading up what is
what kind of,
oh, black, red, Rakdos. So that deck is a group slug deck, which is kind of the opposite of group hug. It just deals damage to everyone, makes them pay whenever they play lands or do anything, and they will sort of become the natural, like, arch enemy of the table. Speaking of.
Like I said, you were involved in Division. You were on the Set to Scene time for a while, and then you did Commander. Yeah. So you were involved with this product from, like, day one to day whatever the last day was.
It's true. It's been really fun, though. Like, I hadn't seen, like, a lot of the classic horror movies, so I got to, like, go and watch, like, The Thing and, like, the original, you know, like, The Shining and Poltergeist and stuff, and it was super fun. And I did watch them all during the day. So I'm a little weak.
What is your favorite part of the set? Like, what are you proudest of as the Vision lead of the set? Like, what do you take away from, wow, this is a cool thing I really like?
I think it's just the how challenging the genre space was with how the set came out. Like, the thing about horror, or, like, being in a horror movie, is, like, things aren't pleasant. Like, they're not fun. Like, that's kind of the point. And it's really hard to sort of adapt that to a game that is meant to be fun. Like, we can't be just using Punisher sacrifice effects all over the place. It's just, you're just not going to have fun when you sit down to play. So, like, how do you reconcile those two things? And I think trying to make a suite of mechanics that are, you know, both, like, showcase the fun of horror, as silly as that sounds, and, like, the world building just, like, really just goes super hard on these amazing visuals that are, like, unsettling pretty. I don't know. It's just, I'm just glad that I think we got a set that at the end of the day is, like, the fun of horror, which is really cool.
Yeah, it is finally, like, the, obviously when we do horror, one of the things we're trying to do is we're trying to evoke some amount of fear, right? And so, mm-hmm. like, Innistrad had this, like, New Phyrexia had this. Like, how do I do stuff that I sort of surprise my opponent? Or I, the player, like, I don't quite know what's going to happen, so there's a little bit of trepidation. Mm-hmm. And, like, I really like how Manifest Dread is, like, who knows what it is? It could be really bad. You have no idea. And that,
yeah.
I enjoy how it really evokes some sense of, uh-oh, what's going to happen?
Yeah, you really want people to, you know, play the game. You don't want them to be so scared they don't want to make an attack or, like, you know. So it was tough. But I think we kind of got there, so.
This was, I guess, your first premiere set, for sure. And I know you did this in Fallout roughly at the same time?
Yeah, Fallout was in, like, its final stages of design around the time I was working on Vision Design for Duskmourn. And I'll say, you know, they're very different products to work on, Commander versus, like, main set. It's just sort of, like, the suite of mechanics, you really got to make sure they all sort of, like, connect together in a way. Whereas in Commander, you just sort of, like, take a deck and go, this is what this deck is about, this is what that deck's about, and they don't have to, like, connect at all. But with the main set, it was just really helpful to have that guiding light of, like, okay, enchantments matter. How do we make enchantments spooky? Like, what can we do with them to, like, just set it apart from other sets that have enchantments matter and other spooky sets? We just got to find a way to make, you know, Duskmourn feel holistic and unique. And it was super fun. And, yeah, learned a lot.
Yeah, the other challenging thing. So we wanted to stay off Innistrad, so we choose enchantments. Then we need to stay off Theros, because Theros is kind of our previous enchantment world. And so there's an interesting thing of, like, we've done a lot with artifacts and enchantments. Like, this is only the second world, really. I mean, obviously, Wilds of Eldraine did a bunch of stuff with enchantments, you know, so that, and Kamigawa, I guess, had an enchantment component. So other worlds have had elements of enchantments. But this and Theros are like, look, it's about enchantments. Like, it's to its core about it. What did we do to keep it off Theros?
I think a lot of it was the creative heavy lifting. to me, just like what an enchantment means on Theros means something entirely different here. Just like how like a Phyrexian being an artifact is different than like, you know, a Kaladesh contraption being an artifact, right? So I think it was, yeah, a lot of creative work, honestly.
Another big difference is Theros was about building up. Theros was about, like, I'm going on adventure and I'm turning from a nobody into a hero or whatever. And so a lot of the enchantment work there was more focused on auras and on things that went on a creature. So that a lot of what happened in Theros is my auras change things over time. This set does not do a lot with auras, not aura specific. Here, the enchantments are more about I create an environment and I do something, and they're much more global in nature and less focused. And so that was another big difference is because we were capturing mood and tone, we played a lot more in the space. Even our creatures were a lot more like, I'm here, but also I'm freaky, so, you know, the environment is different because I'm here. And I think that going from the sort of a local to global enchantment thing really gave this set, like, this set feels very enchantment-y, but it does not, even though on some level, Eerie and Constellation aren't that far from each other, they feel very different, even though, you know, like, under the hood, they're not that different, but the tone and sort of the kind of enchantments we're using. The other big thing that we did in this set with enchantments is the idea of things lasting, of like, I'm an enchantment that I become a creature, or I'm a creature, and when I die, I become an enchantment. There's a lot more of transitional states than we did in Theros.
Oh, yeah. The one last mechanic was impending.
Oh, yes, sort impending. Of like yes.
That, yeah, that's suspend rift. But yeah, that starts out as an enchantment. As you remove the time counters, it becomes a big, scary overlord monster guy. But yeah, that was definitely a riff on suspend, because, you know, what else captures suspense other than time? And yeah, so, yep, another great way to leverage enchantments.
Yeah, impending also does a great thing, which is one of the scary things is I have something that you'll be afraid of, and it's coming, and you're aware it's coming, and I'm like, I better get, uh-oh, this is coming, I better make things happen before this shows up.
Mm-hmm. But again, very tricky to design. Like, you can't just really just have any old card sitting out there forever. It's got to be very intentional, or else you will not have a good time.
Well, I'm also, it's a mythic rare cycle, so there's not.
Yes.
The ass fan is low, as we say. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, we are almost out of time here. So, final thoughts, like, having been through the whole process, seeing your first premiere set finally come out, final thoughts?
I want to do it again. It was really fun. I think there's something super fun about having, like, a blank slate of, like, a file to just jam stuff in and just try it. See what works, see what doesn't work. And guess what? You have this whole file in front of you. You can make the changes. And I just think being empowered in that way is really super fun. And I encourage people to do it in their free time, because honestly, you might be able to make a job out of it. So that's it. I think, yeah, it was a great time.
And just so the audience knows, Annie did get a second set. This time it was a return set. So your first was in return set, but your second was a return set. So Annie is the lead for Yachting, which is a return to Strixhaven. So.
Oh, they know that, yeah.
Well, that's all they know. We can't tell them anything beyond that.
We're going back.
Now they know you did it. I guess they didn't know that. But now we're telling them that you did it. So, okay, but anyway, awesome. Some exciting down the road. So anyway, thank you for joining with us today, Annie. It was fun talking Duskmourn with you.
Mm-hmm.
But guys, I can see my desk. So we all know what that means. It means this is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to make it magic. So I'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.